talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is W. Bruce Cameron, the New York Times bestselling author of more than a dozen books, mostly canine-oriented, including A Dog's Purpose, the hit novel adapted into a recent feature film starring Dennis Quaid, now out on DVD and streaming. Nothing if not prolific, Cameron returns now with A Dog's Way Home, whose central story revolves around breed-specific legislation, specifically Denver's ban on pit bulls, as it pertains to the novel's pup protagonist and narrator, a pit mix named Bella. We'll hear more about how he decided to make the pit bull ban a core element of his new book. Florida has one of these bans, by the way, in Miami-Dade County. The art of riding dogs and more when I speak with Bruce Cameron in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Anita Kreintz, the Canadian animal activist arrested for giving water to a truckload of thirsty pigs as the truck was pulling into a slaughterhouse. The case generated tremendous worldwide attention and media coverage. I spoke with her at length in February of 2016, and just this last Thursday, the judge found Kreintz not guilty. Also, I want to mention that our family said goodbye yesterday to an extraordinary dog, my mother-in-law's much-beloved Yorkshire Terrier, Monty. He was her faithful companion for 16 years. She occasionally joked that Monty was her longest relationship. Monty was a small dog with a very big personality, and while we're all pretty sad that he's gone, we take comfort in knowing that he's truly resting in peace now. Lastly, we're about 3 weeks away from the WNF Summer Fun Drive, which starts June 1st. So that we and you can get a head start on the fun drive, I'm offering an opportunity to pledge today for a pair of tickets to see legendary punk band X May 14th, this Sunday, at the State Theater. All these years later, there's still a great live act. John Doe has been a guest on Talking Animals multiple times, and I'm seeking a very modest pledge of just $88.50 for a pair of X tickets. Email me at dj@wmnf.org if you're interested. I mentioned this last week. A guy emailed me immediately saying, I'm in, send me the details. So I didn't pitch the tickets again the rest of the whole show, thinking they were committed, and then later he said he couldn't go. So let's give this another try. Again, just an $88.50 pledge for a pair of tickets to see X. Email me again at dj@wmnf.org. Right now, though, let's get to Bruce and his wonderful new book with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Bruce Cameron back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Bruce.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back on Talking Animals, early out there, California time to boot. So appreciate it all the more. I think it's safe to say you are super prolific. You write books the way most of us bang out emails, it seems. So I'm kind of interested just generally in what drives you and drives the work. And to look at that in one way, I'm wondering, for example, in conceiving Dog's Way Home, how early did you decide breed-specific legislation, BSL for short, would be a central component? Like, hey, that's the book I want to write next.
It starts with the fact that my daughter runs a rescue in Denver, Colorado. And Denver is one of the few cities that has breed discriminatory legislation, or BSL, the breed specific legislation, as you just called it. It is this this idea that because of the way an animal looks, specifically the way a dog looks, that he is particularly more dangerous than any other than a dog that looks somewhat different. I was really perplexed by this, and it got weirder the more I looked into the law itself, because, it is targeting pit pit bulls, but they're saying pit bulls like saying hound dog. It's an A-specific term that applies rather broadly across several different breeds. All that's necessary for a dog to be declared a pit bull is for three animal control officers to agree that it's a pit bull. And then under the terms of Denver law, if they pick it up, they will chip it and tag it, and if they pick the dog up a second time, they will euthanize it. The dog is exterminated because of the way it looks. I kind of couldn't wrap my brain around that, and how it is applied is so arbitrary. There's no DNA test. There's nothing done. The dogs are just identified because of they look to some officers like it's a pit bull.
And we don't want to do too many spoilers here, or really any to speak of, with the book just out yesterday, of course. But one of the elements of the book, as it specifically ties to this, is that, yeah, it's so unscientific that if you get a animal control officer, as in the story here of A Dog's Way Home, that seems to have it out for those kind of dogs, and so is readily identifying any dog that might vaguely meet the description as a pit bull, then there's a quick tag right there.
Yeah, it's so very deliberately the cover of A Dog's Way Home has a dog that is a pit bull mix, but I don't know that you would at first glance say, oh yeah, that's a pit bull, because that's precisely the world in which these dogs are living, where they're you know, the caprice of the animal control officers, the ACOs, can decide their fate. And so Bella in A Dog's Way Home is tagged as a pit bull, and her owner is forced to relocate her, is forced to give her up to an animal rescue organization that takes Bella a couple hundred miles away to put her in a foster home where she will be safe. And for Bella, this is almost worse than a death sentence. This is something that she absolutely feels is a mistake on the order of a perversion of nature. She knows she belongs with her person, so she decides to set out to return home, and that means crossing hundreds of miles of Rocky Mountain wilderness over a period of a couple of years.
Well, and it's quite a journey. They want to come back to at least part of it in a moment. But the whole breed-specific legislation, I mean, I remember at a conference I was at a few years ago, and there was a presentation on kind of this very issue, like the difficulty of identifying pit bulls or pit bull mixes or pit bull dogs. They made a point of calling it in this presentation pit bull-like dogs, I think, even. So they showed a series, like in a PowerPoint, a series of slides, and the people that were attending were asked just informally to see which dogs they could say were pits or pit mixes and which weren't. And along the way, one of the slides, to me, looked like our yellow lab. And the lady giving the presentation said that has, so far of the ones we've seen, that has the most pit in her.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's confounding. So I guess I just mentioned that by way of saying that the idea that these, and the places that have these BSLs, the pit bull bans, Denver and again, Miami-Dade, just in our own state here, has one, and there's many others. If it's just really by visually identifying the dog, there's really, it's totally random.
In A Dog's Way Home, Bella is the most gentle, loving of creatures. She spends a lot of time at the VA hospital, where she doesn't. I don't want to say she works with vets because she's not officially sanctioned in the book A Dog's Way Home. She winds up going to the VA hospital because that's where her person works, and he sneaks her in, and then the vets fall in love with her. She's this wonderful dog who's very calming and very loving, very much like my daughter's dog, Portia, who Portia is a bull mastiff mix who was severely beaten and left for dead. And my daughter runs an animal rescue and rescued Portia. And now Portia is a certified therapy dog, and you can't imagine a more gentle, loving dog, although she looks monstrous. She's huge. She could be terrifying to someone who doesn't know dogs, who can't tell a dog's demeanor just by glancing at it. You might be frightened of Portia, but nobody would be frightened of Bella. Bella is a wonderful dog, and yet Bella is put on the list. They say she's a vicious dog. And that is that lies at the heart of, as you say, it's confounding, the heart of this confounding law, which is that without any evidence of viciousness whatsoever, some dogs are sent away. And they're sent away for, if you read the very few proponents of breed discriminatory legislation, they have some really ridiculous fake news out there about pit bulls. There's information that suggests that their jaws are specially designed to lock when they bite something, and so they're even more vicious than normal dogs. That's completely false. There's no one who agrees with that of any scientific credentials. There is just a rumor that for whatever reason, some politicians in some cities have embraced.
What's disturbing along those lines, Bruce, I find is that I double-checked this in reading the book and preparing to talk to you today, but I think there are over 900 U.S. cities that have some version of breed-specific legislation, in other words, pit bull bans. And yeah. So it's not just like weird isolated pockets where this happens. It's pretty widespread.
No, it comes out of fear and ignorance, and one of the things that I try to do as a writer, I did this with a dog's purpose, is to try to communicate an idea to my readers, to my audience. So with a dog's purpose, it was that dogs are devoted to us, and dogs love us, and in A Dog's Way Home, it's that gentle, loving dogs are wrongly being pulled away from their family. And people are losing their dogs because of this legislation. You know, I read a survey. It sounds right to me. 84% of Americans say they don't want the government telling them what kind of dog they may and may not have. That's a pretty strong constituency in favor of allowing people to own whatever dog they would like.
Yeah, 84% seems like a pretty sizable majority, absolutely. Let people know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Bruce Cameron, author of such books as A Dog's Purpose, which became a feature film starring Dennis Quaid. His new book, just out yesterday, in fact, is A Dog's Way Home. If you'd like to ask Bruce a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So let me maybe expand a little bit on that last idea that you mentioned, Bruce, about having a specific point or idea, message even in a book. So tell me your views of fiction writing, in this case maybe more as advocacy, because it really seemed like you were aiming to raise the issue of the whole BSL, pit bull bans, and the impact such laws can have on humans, on dogs, on families. I mean, I assume that you said, well, this is going to be a central idea of this book, and hopefully we'll educate some folks and maybe start to affect some change.
Yeah, I don't think that I don't want to stand up and say that A Dog's Way Home is a political treatise or it's propaganda. It is actually a very joyful story. It's an adventure story. It's got some really surprising twists and turns, starting from the very beginning, where the dog Bella is born underneath an abandoned house and lives among feral cats the first several weeks of her life. So I want to be clear that I don't try to tell a story by focusing on the negative consequences. So even though it is true that it is heartbreaking when Bella is torn away from her family, it is also true that the Bella's adventures trying to make her way back to her people aren't intended to tell a political story. It is more intended to give you a sense of a lot of things. One of them being how unlikely it is for a dog a domesticated dog to survive in the wilderness because, of course, you know, we have raised them to be dependent upon us. So A Dog's Way Home is a celebration of that bond. I'm hoping that throughout the book, most of the time, people will forget that Bella is a pit bull mix, because that's sort of the point, which is that if a dog is devoted and loves you, what does it matter what breed it is?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, that's sort of the fact that she could be considered a pit or pit bull mix and is in Denver where there is this ban drives the story in the sense that it sends her what ultimately is on this big sort of journey to find her way back to her human. So in that way, it's kind of central. But yeah, for a lot of the book and a lot of her journey, it's incidental, as it should be.
Yeah, it's called A Dog's Way Home for a very good reason, is that that's the plot, that's the story, that is the thing we're focused on, is this dog wants to be home with her people and will do whatever it takes to make that happen.
All right, well, I've got plenty more questions, but we've got a couple calls here. Let's try to work one into the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bruce Cameron.
Is this me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi, I got a question. It might be a little bit of change up of the subject, but I heard you talking about bull. I got a bull terrier, and it's got a itching issue, and I'm wondering if anybody there would know what might help that.
Okay.
Or is this the wrong time and place for it?
Well, I don't have an answer to that. Bruce may. Otherwise, if we get an email or somebody writing in with a response, I'll be happy to pass that along.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry to hear it. My dog has, I've got a terrier mix that we actually don't know what is in Tucker. He's 24 pounds of suspect DNA. But when Tucker has an allergy to grass pollen and an allergy to fleas, they both drive him absolutely wild. And we don't find, we find that we have to bathe Tucker and give him flea medication and keep him off of grass, which is much easier to do in a city. We live in Los Angeles, so it's actually easy to avoid grass. But we have found that nothing topical and Benadryl doesn't work. We haven't found anything that works to alleviate the itching itself. Only prevention.
So. Well, one thing that I tried that I looked up on the web that helped a little bit was I blended up some oatmeal into a fine powder and then put that on the dog. And the dog, it was itching almost constantly, and it brought it down to about maybe, brought the itching down by 90%. But I just figured I'd ask.
Yeah.
The puppy, it's 10 weeks old, 14 pounds, and just a cute little dog. Doesn't have fleas, and the vet said the Dramamine, too. So, all right, well, I just figured I'd ask.
All right, well, thanks for your call. It sounds like, meanwhile, the oatmeal is a pretty darn good solution. So it sounds like you're onto something there.
Yeah, that, and they said that putting a little apple cider, the unfiltered apple cider vinegar, the raw stuff, the good stuff, in a cat bowl and a water bowl to help change the pH in her skin and help too. So, good luck.
Okay, thanks so much for your call. So, Bruce, one of the things that, since we've talked a little bit about Bella's journey, and again, it is called A Dog's Way Home for a very good reason, because that is a big portion of the book. One of the things that struck me about that was that, as, of course, the narrator of the book, we find out a lot of what's going on and what she's thinking and what her encounters are like. But she also really describes missing not only her person, Lucas, but various animal friends. And I wondered about this, I guess, for our own dog, especially lately. How did you arrive at this notion? I mean, we've talked the other times you've been on the show about riding dogs and how that's just something, obviously, you're very, very good at, and it's harder, way harder, I think, than it might seem to people, so that it's convincing and consistent. So how did you arrive kind of at this notion of about dogs not only missing maybe their humans, but either missing other dogs or even other animals in Bella's case?
Well, I think that when we think about dogs missing people and missing other dogs and other animals in their lives, I think what we want to be careful not to do is try to translate that into how people miss animals and miss their friends and their dogs and their families. I think for a dog, it operates on a more instinctive level. I think when Bella is missing her person, when she's missing Lucas, I really feel like it's a visceral pain that may not be as easily identifiable. For people, I think we, at least this is how I do it, when I miss something, I start off picturing whatever it is I'm missing or whoever it is I'm missing, and then that causes a longing in me. For a dog, I wonder if it isn't sort of the reverse. I wonder if our dogs don't miss us with a longing that borders on hunger and pain, and then it takes them some time to figure out what that feeling is all about, because anything that is unpleasant and a sad, negative emotion for a dog must feel like a very foreign, almost alien concept, and they're such happy creatures all the time. But we know whenever we come home from work or whenever we've been separated from our dog, from our dogs for a while, we know that they have missed us because of the joy with which they greet us when we walk in that door.
Yeah, it's like the classic YouTube videos of the soldier returning after a tour and just the dog going bonkers. And let's get someone else involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bruce Cameron.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead. It's you, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I mean, I love animals, and I've been around pit bulls. I lived in Maui, in Hawaii, and there's a million of those brown pit bulls there. And I do believe that they're very loving to owners and people that raise them correctly and stuff, but I'm just wondering a little bit about the relationship. But, you know, what is the name pit bull if they were not designed for fighting? And if their aggression is really more based on other dogs, I understand they could be loving to humans and even small children, but I think they have, there's something, a connection there with the aggression and fighting with other dogs. And I've seen it, and it's hard to get away from. And I, you know, and I think that's really the cause of all of this, all of these laws that are, I really think somebody has to address that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call. And Bruce, would you like to respond?
Sure. I think that there's a real sample bias that happens when people make a claim like this. It's very forgivable, but you can quickly translate it into you can translate it into something like this. So I was robbed by a redheaded man. All redheaded men are robbers. It isn't logical at all. It kind of makes you laugh just to say it. And yet this is sort of what happens. You see, when you're in Maui and you see all these brown pit bulls running around, they are not constantly fighting. They are not constantly attacking other dogs. They might, on occasion, get in a fight with a dog, just as two schnauzers might go at it, or a dachshund, or, you know, I saw a little tiny dog, couldn't weigh more than a pound and a half, attack a Malamute one time. So while this is going on, I don't think you could say, well, then there, I saw a pit bull today get in a dog fight, therefore they are aggressive, and they're aggressive toward other dogs. Because the evidence just doesn't back up that claim. These are these sort of anecdotal observations that don't make for a statistical basis for banning dogs and ripping apart families and taking dogs away from people.
And for our caller, I imagine you probably read this book as part of your preparation for your own book, but Bronwyn Dickey was actually just on again last week as her paper book version of her really fantastic book called Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon. Again, it's now out on paperback. And one of the things we talked about briefly last week and then when she was on at length when the book first came out is how much emotionally charged elements there are to any discussion of a pit bull, but how there's actual real science and real history that she does an incredible job, I think, of presenting in her book. She spent 7 years on the book, deeply researched, well-reported, beautifully written. So to our caller and others interested in pit bulls and some of the hysteria that seems to surround them and surround even the media reporting of them, I think that's an incredible resource.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful book. I read it when I sat down to write A Dog's Way Home, because I wanted to get a little information about pit bulls, but I have to confessed, I need to read it again. You make an excellent point.
While we're making recommendations, one of our emailers has a recommendation for our caller with the dog itching challenge. It says, one of the best products I've discovered is Bag Balm in the green tin. So
give that a shot.
Yeah. So, and then just as I was saying that, another one came in. People are definitely trying to help out here. Back to the allergy call, maybe you should evaluate the food he is feeding. And then it goes on to say, Mr. Cameron, I followed you for years and love all your work. I wish you the best of luck with this new book. Anxious waiting my signed copy and know exactly what I will be reading next. Best wishes. So there you go.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Again, back to writing dogs, just because, again, I think it's really interesting, especially on a show like this, maybe more than some. There are a lot of books over the years where people have written them with the dog being the narrator, and it's hard to do. It's hard to do well, and I think part of the success of your books is that you do it well, and I think we have talked about a few times in the past is that there's real rules, I think, that you've established for yourself in terms of the dog narrating the story and what the dogs could or could not or should not know.
Right.
Just even in the new book, I like some of the observations, like Bella notes that people are times are really boozing it up, even though she has no idea, of course, what booze is. So she talks about something in bottles and something that has kind of an odd smell and sort of circles around these things. But you still get the important message in those parts of the story or those scenes that somebody's definitely hitting the bottle kind of hard or something going on with some serious parting or whatever that's central, of course, to that scene or whatever's going on in that portion of the book. And, you know, also, of course, funny in different times reporting. Like early on, there's these guys and she's trying to puzzle out the people's names. And I'm paraphrasing here, but one, she says something like, you know, one was called Dude, but it was confusing because sometimes he called the other one Dude and so
yeah.
on. So anyway, so any just brief review of the key tenets of writing dogs successfully?
Yeah, I would say that you're absolutely right. When I was writing A Dog's Way Home, you'd think after writing a dog's purpose series, which was told from a dog's point of view, that I would be able to just sit down and start cranking it out, but it's really hard. I mean, there are things, you know, you could never use a sentence. For example, I decided to wait a few minutes until the coast was clear. Bella doesn't know what a minute is.
Yeah.
What kind of sense does it make when the coast is clear? That's not something a dog would ever say. So you find yourself unable to deploy anything remotely cliched because dogs don't have those expressions in their heads like we do. And you find also that you have to remember that this is an animal that wakes up happy and goes to bed happy and is happy the whole time in between. Even when faced with real adversity, we as humans know that what Bella is facing in the Rocky Mountains is life-threatening, but that doesn't occur to her. Never once does Bella say, oh, I might die. That's not the way the dog views the world. The dog is an optimistic creature. I do think dogs understand death, most assuredly. And I do think that as they approach the end of their lives, I think they know what's going on. But I think their handling of it is completely different than humans. They celebrate every moment they possibly can up until the very, very end. And that's one of the things that we can learn from them is how to be happy and how to live life like the dog.
Great lessons there for sure. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with author Bruce Cameron, who wrote A Dog's Purpose, among other books. His new novel, just out yesterday, is A Dog's Way Home. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So, yeah, that's interesting about, I have to wait a minute till the coast is clear. They could never do something like that. And yet, in Bella's case, like early on when the story is unfolding and there's an issue with the ban on pit bulls and they're in Denver at the time. So while they're trying to figure out what to do and try to sneak the dog in so it's not detected, one of the things that her human teaches her is no barks. So, but I mean, every time she refers to that and other things like that, it's a basic simple verb thing of I'm doing no barks, or I do no barks, or he gives her little treats at night. It's let's do little pieces of cheese. So there's some also some real consistency and rules that you must be following about dogs and verbs even.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think a dog does think, you know, when you say stay, I don't think the dog thinks I am staying.
I think
the dog thinks I am doing stay.
Yeah.
That's the command. Yeah. At times it can make the book really funny. I think A Dog's Way Home will make people laugh a lot because of Bella's goofy take on the world, because Bella is just a typical dog. And then I hope it really moves people, especially as she remains devoted, singularly devoted, if you will, to returning home to her people. That is, to me, such a powerful, powerful thing. And you know, there have been cases of dogs returning over great amounts of time, over long distances, to get back with their people. There's I think the most famous one in history was Bobby the Wonder Dog back in the 1920s. I think 1923, Bobby, who had a little bit of maybe collie in her and some other breeds, was lost while her family lived in Oregon. They were on a trip in Indiana, and Bobby got separated. And heartbroken, they went back home, and more than a year later, over thousands of miles, Bobby shows up on their doorstep, and just from all appearances, apparently walked the entire way home.
No, once again, dogs are amazing, and again, in some cases, determined to get back to somewhere, even if it involves crossing incredible distances.
And we don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
And when I wrote A Dog's Way Home, I wanted to be mindful of the fact that a dog wouldn't explain. Because to a dog's senses is just how a dog sees the world. We see the world so visually that most of our metaphors, including seeing the world that I just deployed, are all built into who we are as a species and how we handle our senses. And our sense of smell is, you know, I love my sense of smell. It's wonderful, but it's nowhere near the instrument that a dog has. Sense of smell is incredible. And then there are many who suggest that a dog has an inner compass, an ability to find true north instinctively. And I've got a compass in my car, and all it does is tell me what direction I'm getting lost in. It doesn't help me at all. But maybe that's it. So I wanted to include in A Dog's Way Home the real notion that there's some sort of sense that Bella has of where her person is, what direction to go. But there's also a sense of smell that she can literally differentiate the smell of Denver from the smell of other towns. And she comes to this conclusion quite honestly as she's being driven away. She realizes that what she's never really noticed, the background ambient odors of home, are coalescing into a singular point that is unique among all the smells. And that is another way she can find her way home. She can find her way to Lucas using her sense of smell. So I've thrown it out there for the reader to decide which they find more persuasive as the argument as to how dogs manage to do this, but it is truly miraculous.
And as you're reading her travels and her account of her travels, I mean, there's nothing that seems improbable, even though she is covering a tremendous distance by the time she gets back to her human. She does seem to have an unerring sense, and a lot of it is driven by smell, so doesn't seem odd or surprising that she can go to or from a certain smell or identify not only animal friend or other things, but the certain sense of a city that she's leaving or getting closer to as being familiar.
Yes, and I just want us all to sort of to think for a minute, talking about this, but to just imagine the world from Bella's point of view when she is making her way back. You know, when we set off on a long journey, we do so with a fair amount of confidence. We know that we're going to get on the road, and the roads all lead to other roads, and we're going to take I-70 and go east, and, you know, pretty soon we'll be in Indianapolis. That's just how it works. But for a dog, there's just this vast unknown between here and there. She doesn't know what she's getting herself into, and she figures out over time that when she's up in the Rocky Mountains, she is in real trouble when it comes to getting food, that there is just it's very challenging. When she's in town, she can scavenge, and she can raid trash cans, but that doesn't set her on her way, and there are people who, through the goodness of their heart, would like to capture Bella and keep her from roaming. That, you know, good people recognize that lost dogs need to be rehomed. In this case, they're not doing Bella a service because Bella knows very specifically where she's going, or at least what direction she's going. But she has no sense of how long it's going to take to get there. She just knows she has to go do it.
And there are some significant detours along the way, even by largely well-intentioned people, including one, by the way, who is named Gavin, and it's hard not to see that as a nod to the producer of A Dog's Purpose. is it
exactly?
So that's a nice touch. And now, in a way, speaking of that, I mean, just we're in our last minute or two here, Bruce, but do you, even though, as we've discussed, a large part of the book is really about Bella's journey and how she travels and why and her humans and trying to get back. But again, as we've established, what sort of launches her on that journey is directly tied to the BSL, the Pitbull Ban in Denver. I mean, do you anticipate any, since we've noted earlier that some people feel very strongly about pit bulls and pit bull bans, do you anticipate any criticism or objections to the book on just on that level?
Well, there's an organization that I just assumed that name that has had me in their crosshairs in the past that is on record as believing that pit bulls should be, what's the best way to put this? They should be eliminated.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be, the breed should not exist, and that all pit bulls should be euthanized for a very peculiar reason. There, the feeling is that pit bulls might be put to ill use. They might be trained to be fighting dogs.
Yeah.
I'm anticipating that once a Dog's Way Home gets out into the world and people start reading it and talking about this topic, that who knows what sort of tactics will be used. And I'm braced for it. During the last imbroglio, we had death threats and all sorts of things happen. And I throw up my hands and I just don't understand. I don't understand the amount of anger and even hate that flows from these people. In my opinion, I was raised to believe that reasonable people can reasonably disagree on topics and yet still remain civil. That isn't how I've been treated in the past. But this is an important, as you have pointed out many times in this hour, it's an important issue. Making people aware that these wonderful animals are being treated a certain way just because of the way they look, and that there are cities where the government determines what dogs you can and cannot own. I think making people aware of that is really important.
Well, and again, I will follow suit then and not name the organization you're referring to, which, in a sort of weird coincidence and then some, when you and your collaborator and wife, Catherine Michon, were on the show last time, just before A Dog's Purpose was to come out, the film, that group launched its effort 2 hours or so after we had our conversation on the air to effectively torpedo the film. So when you say you're in their crosshairs, I don't begin to understand why exactly, although I guess some of their philosophies when it comes to companion animals, as they say, and specifically now with pit bulls, I guess helps explain it. But that was quite a wild period there.
Yeah, that's one way to put it, I suppose. We were caught so flat-footed. They had 15 months to prepare their campaign. We found ourselves having to react on social media within an hour of the story breaking. And of course, at first, they controlled the news cycle. They had the edited film, and they had their version of what was happening in the edited film, and they put it out there, and a lot of people believed it. And then there was it took a while for an independent investigation to comb through all the film and comb through all the video from that day and determine exactly what happened. And so even though we were in the end vindicated, there are still people to this day who very stridently insist that their point of view is correct, refuse to acknowledge that other people might look at the same video, especially the full day's worth of video, and reach different conclusions. There are people who just can't hold that concept in their head without becoming totally enraged, and I don't understand that. I mean, but there you go. And I think you're absolutely right. The problem is that Catherine and I are pro rescue. We do our best to support non-kill shelters. We recognize that there is a place in the animal rescue cycle where they simply have to euthanize some dogs for the best. It's the best that can be done for those poor creatures. But we certainly don't believe in mass euthanization of dogs simply because of their breed.
Yeah.
And so we're constantly going to be fighting against these people, and that's just the way that goes.
Yeah. Well, I should just quickly add, too, that just to elaborate, that video that was released a couple hours after we all last spoke here on the show was found to be highly doctored, and there was an investigation of what all was shot that day on the set, etc. So anyway, but now we're on to this book. It's A Dog Ways Home, a wonderful read, and another in increasingly long string of great dog books by Bruce Cameron. That's who we've been speaking to. His website, by the way, is brucecameron.com, and A Dog's Way Home, again, just came out yesterday, so wherever you get your books, you can choose to get your book there. So, Bruce, thanks so much for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Duncan. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks. Bye-bye. In a few minutes, I'll talk with Anita Kreintz about the verdict in her internationally famous or infamous case of being arrested for giving water to a truckload of thirsty pigs en route to a slaughterhouse. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. This is Tom Papa with a piece called Pet People in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
We gotta go somewhere, though. This baby is just killing us. We had to have a baby, though. It was really getting to a point. My wife was becoming one of those weird pet people. Like, anytime someone would tell a story about their kid doing something like scoring a goal in soccer, my wife would chime in, "Oh, that's like Gracie when she bats the ball down the hallway." Shut up. Pet people are very aggressive now. Have you noticed that? Pet people, very, very mean. If you don't like pets, they think you're like a Nazi or something. You don't like pets? You're so mean. How can you not like pets? You're so mean. Really, I'm mean. I'm not the one keeping a wild animal hostage in my apartment. No, but he loves me. Really. Open the door. See how much he loves you as he's hightailing it to Pennsylvania.
That was Tom Papa with a piece called Pet People, taken from his album Cool, Calm, and Collected. Now on to my conversation with Anita Kreintz. Indeed, let's welcome Anita back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Anita.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, in February of 2016, we spoke at length about the case, but just to ensure everyone listening is kind of caught up, can you just sort of briefly summarize why you were arrested?
We were holding a regular vigil outside a slaughterhouse, and it was a hot June day in 2015, and a transport truck stopped at a red set of lights, and I looked in, and I saw thirsty, panting pigs with their mouths open, and I said, "Let's give them water," and the trucker jumped out and said, "Don't give them water," and I quoted the Bible saying, "When I was thirsty, he gave me water," and he said, "He called the police," and I said, "Call Jesus," and nothing happened till a few weeks later, and I received a criminal mischief interference with property charge for giving water to thirsty pigs. And the case garnered a lot of attention on social media and the media. And I was acquitted last week.
Thursday, yeah. So congratulations on that. Are you pleased with the judge's decision? I mean, obviously, of course, it's good to be acquitted. But do you have any kind of mixed feelings at all about some of the other issues that your lawyers had presented in the case that the judge didn't seem to embrace as part of rendering his verdict?
Yes. I mean, first of all, it's really important that he confirm that compassion is not a crime and that, you know, we have a right, and I would say a duty, to give water to thirsty animals. But on the other hand, you know, my lawyers presented a public interest defense, saying, you know, I was acting in the public interest like a good Samaritan, and he didn't really accept that, and so he just dismissed the case more on technical grounds, that I didn't interfere with property, property being the pigs, and also the issue of are pigs persons rather than simply property, which is a very degrading notion. He said, under Canadian law, pigs and other animals, including cats and dogs, are property, and I thought that was a little bit black and white. I think there have been some inroads with respect to recognizing personhood, and that's something that we need to work on, I think, at a societal level, and our group is going to campaign on that issue of, you know, persons, not property.
And does that lend itself to some kind of collaboration, perhaps, with Stephen Weiss and his group that has done a lot in the courtroom, especially with trying to establish personhood for animals of one kind
Absolutely.
Or another?
Absolutely. You know, Professor Stephen Weiss, this non-human rights project, is looking at initiatives around the world. And so we're going to very much learn more about his project and continue to work both at the societal level and at the legal level to promote this idea that, that animals are sentient beings and persons, and they should be recognized as such in the law. We already know that they are ethically and scientifically, but they need to have legal personhood status as well.
And then if that could be established, that would radically alter all kinds of issues and cases, including one like yours, because then this whole idea of, hey, at the end of the day, they're just property, therefore we can do this, this, and this because they are property, that has to then be entirely removed from the discussion.
Exactly. I mean, historically, human slaves and women were considered property, and it took social movements to organize and mobilize and challenge that at the legal level as well. So that's something where, you know, we need to make inroads on, you know, step by step. And there are a number of initiatives around the world, in Alaska and Quebec and Australia and New Zealand. And so that's something that we're going to be working on now.
You know, when we spoke last time, there were a number of so-called save groups that had cropped up in the wake of the Toronto Pig Save that you had founded initially. How many of those groups now exist, and how far do they extend across the globe?
Well, when we last spoke a year ago, there were 50, and mm-hmm. now there are 150. And this year, a lot of new groups started in places where we had none. So, for example, there's a Hong Kong Pig Save. This year, there are four new groups in South America, in Lima, Peru, Brazil, Bogota, Colombia, and one in Chile. And then there are almost 40 groups in the U.K., there are new groups in Sweden, Switzerland, the Netherlands, and more groups in Australia, and many more groups in Canada and the U.S. In the U.S., L.A. Animal Save has huge vigils every week. A week ago, they had 160 people at Farmer John's pig slaughterhouse. There are groups in Knoxville and a new group in Nashville. There's a very strong group in North Carolina.
So they're popping up regularly.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're just for a fair amount of time, and we will talk again about some of this in great detail. But just, and this may be too big a question for just our probably 20, 30 seconds we have left, but what do you think with the verdict and kind of where it's heading, what do you think Leo Tolstoy would think?
Oh, thank you for that question. Leo Tolstoy define bearing witness as not looking away, but coming as close as you can and trying to help when you see someone suffering. So he would, you know, very much agree that compassion is not a crime, and he would also, you know, encourage everyone to see it as their duty not to turn away when you see someone suffering. You know, as animal lovers, you need to give your time and strength to those that you love, and that's how Leo Tolstoy defined love.
Okay. Well, that's the perfect point to leave it in. And again, we will talk again, hopefully not too far down the road. This has been Anita Kreins. Congratulations on the verdict. And yet I know there's much more work to be done. And thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. We have reached the end of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Brandon Largo, Wee Wachee, NPR News is next.